This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. This week we have a special holiday program for you. We'll hear a number of segments, including one on the best way to enjoy a turkey dinner. A late local famous radio personality will have a story for you. Paul McDougall from The Good Sentence stops in for this holiday special and more. But first, Elder Shirley Christmas of Member 2 begins the show. This is her original Christmas story with drumming and song by Jeff Ward.
The first gift. Festive is the season of Christmas as we know it today. Laughter and good cheer are spread far and wide. Trees are decorated with care. Gifts are wrapped with love. Oh, such scenes cascade warmth through one's spirit. I could not help but wonder if Two Arrows had felt the same as I do so many centuries ago. The beginning of winter settles in on a small island off the eastern coast. Two Arrows lived with his parents and a younger sister, Moonchild. Chilly winds howl outside the wigwam as Two Arrows added more wood to the fire. Mother cradles her daughter close to her while gently singing a lullaby of old. Two Arrows looked up from the fire at his mother and speaks. "Will my sister be well soon?" he asked worriedly. He could see the tears in his mother's eyes as she continued to sing softly. When at last Moonchild had fallen asleep, Mother laid her down and sat next to her son. "Two Arrows," she began with a heavy heart. "Your father hunts over the mountain that is 3 days away. He does not know of his daughter's sickness. You must find him and bring him back, for your sister is gravely ill." Two Arrows felt the pain in his mother's heart. Quickly he gathered what was needed for his journey past the mountain of the Ancient One. For 2 days he followed the trail of his father and the other hunters. With night coming, he stopped and made camp. After he had finished eating, Two Arrows felt the change of wind, which told of a storm overnight. He knew he had to gather more fuel for the fire. As he picked sticks, he heard a song of strangeness all around him. Upon hearing it, it left him in stillness, barely breathing. Then it was gone as quickly as it had come. Back in his shelter, Two Arrows grew tired and soon fell fast asleep. The wind grew fierce around the lean-to, awakening the boy. Realizing it was not yet dawn, Two Arrows turned, covering his head to maintain warmth. He was about to fall back to sleep when he again heard the strange song. Slowly, he emerged from his shelter, looking up at the night sky. Suddenly, he saw a bright glow in the distance. "Perhaps it is the hunters," thought Two Arrows. "I must go quickly and find Father." Along his journey, he thought of his sister Moonchild. The light grew closer, warming his trembling body. Once again, he heard the song which tingled his senses while beckoning for him to come closer. Two Arrows trudged on. Finally, he stopped in wonderment, for the song came from just ahead. A short distance away, he saw a wigwam snugly set beneath the boughs of evergreens. not a muscle stirred, not a sound passed his lips. This is not my father. I do not know him. Who is he? All these thoughts raced through his mind as the man spoke to two rabbis. He smiled while inviting the boy into his home. Inside the warmth of the wigwam, two arrows felt at ease as he watched in wonderment at a young woman holding a newborn child while singing the lullaby he had heard earlier. His thoughts saddened as he felt the pain and saw the tears of his mother holding his sister. Tears rolled down his face as he knelt close to the child, covered only with tattered skins. Reaching into his bag, two arrows felt the softness of rabbit fur. He took it out and gave it to the lady. She smiled as she wrapped her son in its warmth. I cannot stay. I must find my father. You see, my sister is very ill. I must hurry. With that, two arrows left and continued on his journey. It was early morning when he reached the camp of the hunters. Hurriedly, he relayed the story of Moonchild's illness to his father. It wasn't long before everyone headed back to the village. As Two Arrows entered his home 3 days later, only sobs of sadness greeted him, for by the fire sat his mother, cradling Moonchild in her arms. In silence they wept. It was just too much for Two Arrows to bear. Silently, he slipped out into the cold air. With tears streaming down his cheeks, he said, sadly, my parents, if I could give you one gift to take away all your pain and suffering, then I would. It was then he remembered the child in the woods. He returned to his wigwam and sat next to his mother and father. He then told them of his encounter with the people of the woods. He spoke of the warmth and kindness
Next, the late great Ann Terry, a name familiar to many. She lit up the airwaves with her unique golden voice and could paint 1,000 pictures with just a few words. She was known as the First Lady of Cape Breton.
Claude Lise-Gagnon talks about Quebec at Christmas, which, of course, is a very joyous time, I'm sure. But she says, what comes to mind as I conjure up the winters of my childhood is the silence. A silence that was almost complete, except for the sound of the church bells, the tinkling bells of the elegant sleighs called carrioles, and the shouts of children playing in the schoolyard. And I remember how dazzling white everything was 40 years ago. I was born, she said, in Oka, a little village about 50 kilometers west of Montreal. And with the arrival of the first snowstorms at the end of November or the beginning of December, the roads and the highways were always closed, and you could only get around on foot or by sleigh. Cars stayed tucked away in their garages, and to travel any distance at all, you had to take the train. But there wasn't a station at Oka. The train only stopped at Como on the other side of the lake. And when the lake was frozen, the mail and any visitors to our town were transported over the ice. You know, she said, I think about those times occasionally. But the winter that comes to my mind most often is the winter of 1939, when I was 8 years old. Come on, you will be tempted to say, what can you recall of that time? Ah, she said, but when you're 8 years old, important events and people do make a deep impression. They stay in the back of your mind for the rest of your life. And then, too, there are the smells and the pictures and the songs that never cease to follow you. That Christmas, she said, my father was expecting the visit of an important Russian agronomist. During the past 10 years, because the climatic conditions of the two countries are similar, my father and this Russian had been corresponding with each other, discussing their research and various methods of cultivation. Because, you see, my father taught at the local agricultural college, 5 kilometers from Oka. Everything had been prepared for our guest, and in the small wine cellar, carefully put down, were the bottles of my father's favorite things like Bordeaux and Burgundies and Anjou Rosé, and there was one called the Old Bell, translated, the chaser, potent enough to bring tears to the eyes of a seasoned sailor. And then in the freezer were perch and lake pike and pheasants and ducks and a fine plump turkey ready for stuffing and roasts tied up with white string. And for desserts, there were plenty of them, including donuts and meringues and date squares and cream whipped smoother than fine silk and almond tarts. And in the living room stood the Christmas tree, a sparkling, sweet-smelling fir that stretched as high as the ceiling. Cones from our spruce trees, wreathed with red ribbons, hung above the mirrors. In truth, as far as I was concerned, winter began at the Christmas holidays. Before that was merely the end of an old, depressing season. Then on December 24th, 1939, at 3 p.m., Father hired a neighbor's horses to go and meet the important Russian at the train. The horses were 2 fine, black-coated animals, frisky on an outward run and veritable coursers on their way back to the stables. They were harnessed to a black sled where we kept warm under buffalo furs. From the platform of the little station, I spotted the locomotive and its plume of white smoke approaching in the distance, and the first passenger to alight was the fair-bearded Russian who bewitched me instantly. He was tall and powerfully built, wearing an extraordinary sable coat of a kind that I had never seen, and a hat of the same fur after the Cossack style. And with a smile stretching from ear to ear, he opened his arms to my father, told him he had come from Moscow with only vodka to inspire him, whisked me up off the ground, gave a smart tap to the neck of the right-hand horse, climbed into the sleigh, and away we went at a gallop. How comfortable I was, snuggled between the 2 men in their wildcat and sable coats. How I loved that winter, she said. Father Christmas, the holidays, the visit, the snow. I would sometimes hear grown-ups complain that winter never ended and was terribly harsh. For me, she said, it was a source of wonderment. Our house in the heart of the village was lighted completely when we arrived. When the Russian saw my mother, smiling, beautiful, dressed in very soft blue, I could sense he would have been happy to take her in his arms in the way he had approached father. But he bowed to her in a very princely fashion, and with deep rumbling A sounds and heavily trilled R's, he recited in French what were apparently some very well-tuned compliments. That night, as we leisurely ate the appetizing evening meal, we explained to the tall foreigner from Russia that on Christmas Eve, we had a special tradition, Midnight Mass, which in reality consisted of 3 masses. The first, solemn and rather long, was sung in Latin and was celebrated by 3 priests wearing chasubles of gold cloth. The second was shorter, with a choir throwing itself into the Christmas carols that were thoroughly familiar to everyone in the church. And the last Mass was dispatched at a quick, lively pace, the Christ child now having been born and everybody being in a hurry to get back home. Then the presents were placed at the foot of the tree, and finally came the midnight feast, which could and did last until dawn. Although he was Russian Orthodox, our visitor was anxious to accompany us to the Catholic Church, where Denny Arbour, who had the finest voice in the village and was going to become an opera singer, opened the service with the famous O Holy Night. And his sister, Marie-Ange, was at the organ. And the choir was made up of local people, and some of them had very good voices. But when it was the turn of the organist, the lovely Marie-Ange, with her luxurious flowing hair and soft blue eyes, to raise her heavenly voice in silent night, a hushed rapture descended upon us. In short, it was one of the finest midnight masses ever. We still talk about it. Well, the party that followed was a great success, too. The Gaspé salmon, the black duck from the lake, the Lac Saint-Pierre teal, the Lac Saint-Jean meat pie, the famous Oka cheese claimed their moment of attention before being forgotten in favor of apple tarts and homemade sugar pies. And all this was washed down with white and red wine to such good effect that with the cognac came the songs of the vast steppes of Russia, and it lasted for 2 hours. And of course there were presents, and in his suitcases, in addition to vodka and Black Sea caviar and an icon for mother and a balalaika for father and a lacquered jewel case for me and some painted eggs, the big Russian had also brought a number of books, some by Tolstoy and by Chekhov. There was no afternoon in the year when the streets in our town were quieter than on Christmas Day. Everyone was asleep, except for the children who were sent off to play in the snowbanks. I suggested that our guests should come and see the nearby lake where we skated, a favorite winter pastime. I made a point of bringing out the red wooden sleigh that my father had built so that he could take me along, bundled up in a blanket. The big Russian understood right away when he saw the sleigh at the door, and with a laugh he harnessed himself to it, and we headed for the lake. And he brought me some chocolates in the variety store on the way and walked a long distance over the ice, then made a wide detour and returned home through the forest of fir trees. And he told me that he had a little girl like me, a dog like mine, and a little boy. And he often walked in his country, he said, beside a river called Oka, just like here. I was very proud. We are related, I told myself. This stranger from such a faraway land made such a big hit with my friends. And what a funny coat he had, they said. And when he went out for a stroll, he never went alone. A whole crowd of lively little children would go along with him. And when he left, we kept something of him, a Russian song he had taught us called Black Eyes. On the morning of New Year's Day, when the carriole took all four of us to catch the train, he to return to Russia, we to go and celebrate New Year's at my grandparents', the little boys and girls who had so often touched the Russian's coat as if it were a talisman were all there to see him off. And he squeezed several little hands, and he kissed many rosy cheeks, and he took me on his lap. The goodbyes were said at Montreal. They were affectionate, as always happens when people have taken a liking to each other, and everybody promised to meet again. In my grandparents' house, there were 40 of us at 2 tables, and how we talked. As soon as the desserts had disappeared, the men sat around one side, the women on the other. There was a ceaseless interchange of stories, political opinions, bits of news, and so on. The evening ended with dancing and singing for the grown-ups, while we had our own party by the light of the oil lamp and pretended to be asleep when a footstep was heard on the stairs. And eventually everybody did fall asleep, late and happy. True, that night I had heard sinister words. War, René and the army overseas, fighting going on. But when one is 8 years old... Well, it seems that there is more to share, but it will have to be for another time. We've shared music, we've shared memories, we've shared reflections of other people's Christmases, and we've looked a little at our own, and maybe that's what it's all about. A time for stories and nostalgia and laughter and music and quietness and fireplaces and mellow lights and special people. Maybe you're getting ready to have your Christmas dinner. Maybe you've already had your Christmas dinner, and this is the quiet time before the doorbell rings and the laughter begins. Maybe you're alone. No, you're not alone. We're together.
Christmas is a time for giving, and giving they will, for the annual Boxing Day Christmas dinner. Here's Bill Bradley and Eddie Orrell.
Now, Eddie, this has been going on for a number of years. Of course, with COVID, you couldn't do it, and pretty much everything was shut down during COVID, but it's back on again. This is the time of year that you really look forward to, and I know for you, this is an initiative that you started many, many years ago with so many volunteers throughout the community. You look forward to doing this.
Well, this is actually our 10th year with a little break in between, of course, because of COVID. Well, 10 years ago, just because I know people struggle this time of year and some people have no people to enjoy a festive meal with or even company. So I figured what a great way to get people together, enjoy a good festive hot meal and hopefully form some friendships amongst people.
I truly believe this, as do you. It's better to give than receive, and so gracious to all of the volunteers that help out each and every year for this meal, also the North City Fire Department, and we cannot say enough about the Northside Superstore.
You know, it was an idea I had that years ago we just would try to do it and get some donations or to a bunch of people to put some money in, and then when I did go to the Superstore and they offered to pay for the groceries as such, you know, that's a huge endeavor for them, and with everything that's going on this time of year with the cost of living for everything, for them to do that for our community just shows a great interest in what community people they are. And then the North City Fire Hall, like, we use their facility. Everything they have there is open to us as well as their firemen. We get volunteers from Superstore come and help out. The manager at the Superstore has been fabulous to deal with, and they donate all the groceries, every bit of them. So it's very nice for me to feel that people are out there that are willing to do this for people in the community to give back something that the community gives to them.
You may not see it, but there is individuals out there that are in desperate need, and I would say probably one of the biggest years ever because the price of groceries, inflation. As Cape Bretoners do, you know as well as I do, comes to tough times in Cape Breton, we as Cape Bretoners come together to help out and glad to do it.
You know, I get all kinds of people that call and want to volunteer, and we would never turn away a volunteer because the more hands make it for an easier workload. People love to see the faces of people when they're all together. And basically, for a couple of hours in that day, your cares are, you're worry-free. You're getting a nice warm meal. Some people don't have a nice warm meal at this time of year, or they're by themselves and they don't want to cook that kind of meal because it's just a big, expensive endeavor to be by yourself. And so to bring people together, friendship, camaraderie, and a nice, hot, festive meal, it just warms my heart to see that. And it warms the heart of all the volunteers that come and help out from the lowest to the highest, like even the Superstore people, like they're there. And they're very happy to be able to do this. The fire hall is very happy to be able to donate the fire hall. So with that, everybody comes together, and it's a great event. I think it's a great event anyway, and it warms my heart to see that. It's meant for everybody. You don't have to be down and out. You can be the top of the world. But if you're by yourself, you really don't have anything. Friendship is a big thing. Companionship is a big thing. And the more we can bring people together, the meal's a bonus. The companionship, friendship, and the meals all come together is, to me, just perfect.
So what do I need to know, if I'm planning on going this year? When does it start? When does it end? And when should I show up?
We usually try to start serving dinner around noon. Sometimes it could be a little later, depending on how quick the vegetables cook or whatever that may be unforeseen. But usually try and start around noon, and we'll keep going usually between, say, 2 o'clock. But if there's still people coming at 2 o'clock and there's still food left, we'll keep going as long as we need to be able to feed somebody. Now, if it stops and if we run out of food or whatever, it could be sooner, it could be later, but we're not going to stop it if still people out there need and people keep showing up. So we'll just keep going as best we can until we have to.
Yeah, my old buddy and your old buddy, Ernie Wells, is going to be there doing his part, giving back to the community, playing all kinds of Christmas tunes.
Yeah, Ernie's been doing this now for a number of years, and it started out just by accident. He had played a little thing there the night before, one year at the fire hall, and when he came down to pick his gear up that day, people were all there, so we started playing. And from then on, Bernie's been there every year. So hats off to Ernie for donating his time. And we really appreciate it. Everybody there really appreciates it. Ernie's a good entertainer, and he's the type of guy that doesn't mind giving back to the community that's given to him, too. So we're very lucky. And like I say, it was by accident, but now it's almost like if he said he couldn't make it, we'd be really disappointed. So hats off to Ernie as well.
Again, it's coming up on December 26th, noon through until 2 at the North Sydney Firemen's Club, a free Christmas turkey dinner. Everybody is welcome till they run out.
Exactly. And you know what? Again, can't say enough about the Atlantic Superstar North City or the North City Firemen's Club and all the other volunteers that are pitching into on even from peeling the vegetables to cooking the turkeys and doing up the tables and helping with the dishes. And everybody has a part to play. And I got to thank the whole world for everybody, what they do. It's just a big thing for me to be able to see all this come together. And like I say, only for the volunteers, it wouldn't happen. And only for Superstar and the Fire Hall, it wouldn't happen. I got to say a big hats off and thank you to them for what they do and what they continue to do.
Six Potatoes by Ann Camus. This happened roughly 40 years ago in the 80s when I lived in St. Catharines, Ontario, a city near Niagara Falls with a population of 130,000 people. I worked as a cleaning lady. Of my customers, I worked for this one couple, a United Church minister and his wife, a school teacher. Very nice and religious people. Mrs. Hershey taught in jails to try and educate prisoners to have a better life once they got their liberty again. Also, she taught social skills to disabled people. This one man, Peter, about 65 or 70 years old, was one of her students. He'd been diagnosed as being deaf, mute, and mentally challenged. He'd been abused by his parents as a child. He was not to be seen. They were ashamed of his condition. As he got older, he was put in care in this institution run by the government. One day, a heavy object was dropped and he jumped. Upon many tests, it was discovered he could hear. Mrs. Hershey became his caregiver, teaching him social skills and how to talk. He got to the Hershey's and worked for them doing odd jobs. He was being paid minimum wage, so it wouldn't affect his disability pension. The Hershey's were very good to him, spending the summer months at their cottages in northern Ontario. He planted a beautiful vegetable garden every year, did yard work and other light jobs. Eventually, he moved into his own apartment and took care of himself. A lady helped with shopping and household chores. Christmas was upon us. He didn't live very far from my family, 5 or so miles. This one Saturday, I picked him up to go to the Hershey's as I was going there myself. I brought 2 homemade apple pies for the Hershey's and 1 for Peter as Christmas gifts. Ready to leave, the Hershey's gave us each a Christmas card with money, fruit cake for me, and some Christmas cookies for Peter. A few days later, it was Christmas Eve. Wet snow was falling on a very chilly night. We were getting ready to go to the midnight mass. It was 10:45 p.m. and this knock came on the door. What a surprise to see Peter with his gray mustache full of ice and runny nose. His bicycle by the house, hauling a 3-wheeled cart behind. I invited him to come in for a coffee to get warmed up. He was carrying a brown paper bag tied with a red ribbon. He said, "This is for you," and wanted me to open it. The best Christmas gift I ever received. 6 medium-sized potatoes. Of course, tears rolled down my cheeks while our 2 children rolled their eyes in disbelief. To me, this is what Christmas is all about. True love. Merry Christmas. And enjoy your potatoes.
Celebrating Christmas Cape Breton style with the 12 Cape Breton Days of Christmas, here's Bill Bradley again with Jill Murphy at Hospice Palliative Care.
Celebrating Christmas Cape Breton style with the 12 Cape Breton Days of Christmas. It's a work put together by music therapist Jill Murphy at Hospice Palliative Care. Welcome to the program. You've been doing this for a while now, and you meet every Wednesday, right?
I work part-time with Hospice Palliative Care, and we do this group session every Wednesday morning at the hospice, yes.
We've got a Christmas song that we're going to share coming up here shortly. Everybody's familiar with the 12 Days of Christmas, but the 12 Cape Breton Days of Christmas, this is a new twist on it, and I just heard it minutes ago, and we're going to play it coming up on air here.
Music therapy is kind of a unique profession in that it can help you remember. Music can certainly bring back memories. It can also give you that time to kind of put some things maybe on the back burner and just enjoy the days that we have and our friendship and our song and conversation together. And that's exactly what we do with our Wednesday music therapy group.
Now, you've been working on this for a while, I'm guessing, with the 12 Days of Cape Breton Christmas. What actually gave you the idea to do something like this?
in the spring, we wrote a song entitled Springtime in Cape Breton. And it was a process. We wrote the song, we recorded it, we created a video to go with it. And it went over really well. And so as Christmas was coming, we thought, you know what, let's get on it and write a Christmas song. And so I said, well, what about if we rewrite the 12 days of Christmas and kind of put a Cape Breton twist on it? So we started brainstorming. And you're right, it's been several months in the works. We first came up with ideas that make Cape Breton unique. We then fit them into the song. We had our timing down. We practiced it. We recorded it one person at a time in our recording booth that we have at hospice. Then we created a picture slideshow to go with it, which was photos contributed by community members. So, yeah, it's been a process for sure.
So the song and the video, I'm guessing, can also be viewed online. Is that right?
It will be posted on YouTube very soon.
Very soon.
The link will be shared on the Hospice Cape Breton Facebook page, as well as the website, which is hospicecapebreton.org.
I just want to say how great this is that you are reaching out and helping out with patients and helping them forget for a while in the situation that they are in and giving some joy in their life. And what better way to sing about Christmas with the 12 days of Cape Breton Christmas. We thank you for this and all the work that you're doing there.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Have a Merry Christmas.
Same to you.
First day of Christmas, my true love gave to me a tour of the Cabot Trail. On the second day of Christmas, my true love gave to me two cups of tea and a tour of the Cabot Trail. On the third day of Christmas, my true love gave to me three cruise ships docking, two cups of tea, and a tour of the Cabot Trail. On the fourth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me four tartan kilts, three cruise ships docking, two cups of tea, and a tour of the Cabot Trail. On the fifth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me five lobster traps, four tartan kilts, three cruise ships docking, two cups of tea, and a tour of the Cabot Trail. On the sixth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me six bonfires blazing, five lobster traps, four tartan kilts, three ships docking, two cups of tea, and a tour of the Cabot Trail. On the seventh day of Christmas, my true love gave to me seven games of tarbish, six bonfires blazing, five lobster traps, four tartan kilts, three cruise ships docking, two cups of tea, and a tour of the Cabot Trail. On the eighth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me eight causeway tokens, seven games of tarbish, six bonfires blazing, five lobster traps, four tartan kilts, three cruise ships docking, two cups of tea, and a tour of the Cabot Trail. On the ninth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me nine kitchen parties, eight causeway tokens, seven games of tarbish, six bonfires blazing, five lobster traps, four tartan kilts, three cruise ships docking, two cups of tea, and a tour of the Cabot Trail. On the tenth day of Christmas, my true love gave to me ten fiddle players, nine kitchen parties, eight causeway tokens, seven games of tarbish, six bonfires blazing, five lobster traps, four tartan kilts, three cruise ships docking, two cups of tea, and a tour of the cabin trail. On the 11th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 11 Highland dancers, 10 fiddles players, 9 kitchen parties, 8 cosplay tokens, 7 games of dervish, 6 bonfires blazing, 5 lobster traps, 4 tartan kills, 3 crucius docking, 2 cups of tea, and a tour of the cabin trail. On the 12th day of Christmas, my true love gave to me 12 sinking potholes, 11 Highland dancers, 10 fiddle players, 9 kitchen parties, 8 cosplay tokens, 7 games of dervish, 6 bonfires blazing, 5 lobster traps, 4 tartan kills, 3 cruise ships docking, 2 cups of tea, and a tour of the cabin trail. Merry Christmas from the Hospice Harmony.
Christmas Eve, 1954, by Barclay Neville. I grew up in Whitney Pier, on the corner of Victoria Road and East Broadway. My father, affectionately known in the community as Johnny Bowtie, was a gentle giant of a man. Due to his stature, neckties were often too short, so he would wear a bow tie, hence the nickname. He was also known for his willingness to help others, volunteer work, and sense of community. Christmas Eve, 1954, was one such occasion that I had the privilege of joining him while he volunteered to help deliver groceries for the nearby store. I was 10 years old. When we finished delivering the groceries, my father asked me if there was anything that I wanted for my helping out. I gave it some thought and decided that I would like to get Christmas gifts for my brothers and sisters. We went back to the store where we had been helping deliver the groceries. After much consideration, I decided that I would like to get each of them a box of animal crackers. At a cost of 10 cents a bag, I purchased my gifts for my siblings. I remember that day as vividly as if it was yesterday. It was my first experience purchasing Christmas gifts for others and started the tradition of gift-giving for me, which I have continued throughout my life. The day was filled with the spirit of Christmas. Acts of generosity, kindness, charity, and family.
The bills are piling up for many out there with the Christmas shopping. We'll add more bills to the pile. Bill Bradley and Bill Nolan. Bradley's the morning show host at the Coast, and Nolan is a Butterball chef.
You know, Butterball is number one, and it's number one for a reason. It's a quality product, and it's something that you can really depend upon. And so, you know, people, when they're cooking a turkey, usually it's for a big deal, whether it's for Christmas or you've got family and friends, and you don't want to be surprised by having a substandard product. And I'm, you know, you just know that you what you're dealing with when you buy a Butterball turkey.
When I think of Christmas, I think Butterball, and I know a lot of other people. It's not just localized to Cape Breton, but people around the world.
It gets pretty busy. We've got a staff of about 40 to 50 people. I think this year we have 49 people on staff that answer calls and texts and emails. You name it. You can even use, you know, the Alexa devices to get information on Butterball. We're on there. So any way you want to get the information, we're here to help you out.
I will tell you this. I phoned the Butterball hotline a number of years ago, and I don't know what year it was. And I thought, no way that they're actually there. And actually, when I was surprised when I talked to a live person. And the phone number is right there on the packaging with Butterball. What's your typical question that people ask about turkeys? Maybe it's somebody just cooking a turkey dinner for the first time, or maybe they've been cooking Butterball turkeys and just have a simple question. What seems to be the typical questions?
Well, you know, Bill, the number one question we get a variety of questions, and it usually falls in an area of 10 or 12 different questions. But the number one question we get year after year without fail is, how do I thaw a turkey? You know, I've got this turkey, and this can be from people that are first time first-time turkey cookers, if you will. They've never had to cook a turkey before, never chosen to cook a turkey. And it's a little imposing. You know, you look at a turkey that is rather large. It's much larger than a chicken. And if it's frozen solid, it's a big chunk of frozen meat. And how am I going to thaw that and thaw it safely? So that's our number one question that we get. And we're always happy to walk people through the process. There's a couple different ways they can do it. You know, several days in the refrigerator is number one because it's hassle free. You put it into the back of the refrigerator and let it sit and thaw slowly. And if you do that, you know, it thaws at a rate of about 4 pounds for 24 hours. And then if you do get into a situation where, and this happens all the time, somebody forgot to thaw their turkey or they got their turkey at the last minute, you can thaw it what we call the cold water method by placing it in a sink of cold water, changing that water every 30 minutes. And that's going to thaw at a much faster rate in a matter of hours rather than a matter of days.
And I've done that. I mean, I've done the two methods, putting in the sink, changing every 30 minutes, and also put the turkey in cold water in my refrigerator as well. So there's different methods. Now, let's talk about turkey. White meat, dark meat. I just did a survey around the office before we made this call, and it seems to be 50-50, but I know that you like the dark meat, and I like the dark meat. A little bit more fattier, but it has a better taste, that I think.
Yeah, I agree, you know, and you and I were talking the other day about this, as you said, you know, I'm a dark meat guy, and it is because a couple different reasons. I find it to be a little more flavorful because of that higher fat content. And the other thing is it's a little more forgiving. So when meat has a little bit higher fat content, of course, it's not going to overcook as easily. When you've got the turkey in the oven and it's cooking along and you're trying to get to those temperatures of where you're supposed to be, which is, you know, 165 or 270 in the breast Fahrenheit, 180 degrees in the thigh, sometimes we lose track of time. And if you're overcooking a little bit, the breast meat can dry out if we're not careful. But the thigh meat will stay juicier even if you overcook it a little bit. And it's because of that little bit of a higher fat content. And it is very, very flavorful. I mean, I've gone that way with not only turkey, but chicken as well. I prefer chicken thighs to chicken breast. But like you said, everybody is different and it's 50-50. And the main thing to keep in mind is as long as you're cooking the turkey to the temperature that we recommend, number one, it's going to be food safe for consumption, which is number one to us. And also, it's going to taste the best it can taste because you're cooking it to that proper temperature.
Do you need to take the lid off and let it brown? Or, I mean, because some people like to have that dark kind of skin on their turkey. How do you go about getting that with a butterball?
Yeah, the best way to do this is what we recommend. Our favorite way to cook a turkey is what Butterball calls the open pan method. Very simple. We set our oven to 325 degrees. We make sure that our turkey is thawed. We take it out of the wrapper. If your turkey has a neck and giblets, we remove those from the cavity. The neck will be in that bottom cavity. The big one has the big opening. And the giblets will be in the top cavity up where the neck used to be at the top of the turkey. We pull those out. Now, if you forget to pull those out, it won't hurt anything if you leave them in when you cook the turkey. So don't panic about that. But we pull those out. We put the turkey in a pan on a rack, which can even be a ring of foil if you want to, if you don't have a rack to put it on. That allows for air circulation. And we put it in the oven after we rub a little oil on the top. The oil is going to help that turkey brown. And if you like a turkey with that dark brown golden skin, the best thing you can do is to cook it using the open pan method because you're going to get that exposure. You're going to get that roasted color. And if you like it that way, which is what I prefer, open pan is the best way to go.
Just talking turkey here, I can just smell the turkey. I can just smell it with all the vegetables, the carrots and the potatoes and turnip. But you talked about the turkey neck and giblets. One of my favorites. I enjoy the turkey neck because I like the dark meat, but some people may throw the giblets out, but we were talking the other day, people should hold on to those because they have a lot of flavor, right?
They do have a lot of flavor, you know, and they will come again in a little bag that's up at that top cavity. You pull those out And I like the best way that I cook my giblets is I will just simmer them in a little bit of, if you have some chicken broth at home or something, chicken broth is best to use. If you don't have a broth or a stock, just use water. And just simmer those in a little water for about 30 to 40 minutes until they're cooked through. And then you can do different things. You can, one of the things that I like to do, and I think I mentioned the other day, is after I've simmered it in that water or stock, then I'll use that liquid from that when I'm making my gravy, because it's going to infuse that flavor from the giblets into that gravy. The other thing you can do, a lot of people will then, after the giblets are cooked, they'll chop them up into smaller pieces and they'll put them in their gravy. So you have little pieces of the giblets in the gravy. And either way, you get that good giblet flavor. And a lot of people just, you know, it seems like giblets have gone by the wayside. People don't use them as much as they used to, but they really add a lot of flavor to your holiday table.
And if folks have any questions whatsoever, you're there.
And that's 1-800-BUTTERBALL. But there's another resource that you can use. I'll give you the digits on that. It's 1-800-288-8372, where you talk to a live human being. Folks can also text us at 844-877-3456. And then when we're not open, or if you just want general information, check out the Butterball website. And the Canadian Butterball website is butterball.ca. And it has a great variety of tools on there that you can use to find out how much turkey do I need. You know, they look for the turkey calculator on the Butterball website. It's in a drop-down menu on the right, and you can plug in the number of people you're going to have at your party or at your gathering. It will tell you how big of a turkey to get, how long it will take to thaw it, and how long to cook it. All in one little calculator right there. But there's also how-to videos on that website and leftover recipe ideas, you name it. It's just a very beautiful website with a ton of information there.
And to close out the show this week, a little piece on the history of Christmas.
Decorating trees, exchanging gifts, and singing songs about Santa Claus. It's what most people think of when they think of Christmas. But for Christians, December 25th has a more important significance. The holiday honors the birth of Jesus Christ some 2,000 years ago. But we bet you didn't know that in the early years of Christianity, Christians didn't celebrate Christmas at all. In fact, there is no mention of December 25th in the Bible. Early Christians couldn't even agree on which date Jesus was actually born. It was only in the 3rd century that December 25th became the official celebration of the birth of Jesus, most likely because it coincided with already existing pagan festivals. By the end of the 8th century, Christmas was widely celebrated across Europe. But its pagan roots died hard, and for many centuries people marked the holiday with wild parties, similar to Mardi Gras celebrations. This would lead some religious purists, such as the Puritan settlers of colonial America, to oppose Christmas celebrations. In 1644, the Massachusetts legislature fined anyone who observed Christmas 5 shillings, which was a lot of money at the time. In fact, Christmas as we know it didn't really begin until the 1800s. That's when Germany's Prince Albert brought his country's longtime tradition of decorating evergreen trees to England after his marriage to Queen Victoria. When an image of the royal family next to their 40-foot Christmas tree was published in American magazines in 1848, the custom caught on in the United States as well. The tradition of sending Christmas cards also started in England around the same time. Giving gifts is a relatively old Christmas tradition, with roots going back many centuries. At first, gift-giving had religious significance, to remind people of the gifts brought to baby Jesus by the three kings. But the Industrial Revolution and the rise of advertising in the 19th and 20th centuries made Christmas the commercial holiday it is today, even as it continues to have religious meaning for Christians. What about the most famous of all Christmas characters, Santa Claus? He's actually based on St. Nicholas of Myra, a Dutch saint famous for giving gifts, who is known as Sinterklaas. In early incarnations, Santa Claus wore many different colors. But after a Coca-Cola ad in the 1930s showed him wearing red and white, the image stuck. From the date of the holiday itself to the traditions associated with it, Christmas has a long and colorful history. We bet you didn't know.
That's all for Dialogue this week. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Thanks for listening. I'm Bill McCush.
Catch Dialogue 3 times weekly, Sunday at noon, Tuesday and Thursday at 10 p.m. Dialogue is a production of the Coast 89.7 News. For story suggestions, contact 902-284-NEWS. That's 902-284-6397. Or email news@coastalradio.ca. For past episodes of Dialogue, check out our Dialogue podcasts, available now online at coastalradio.ca.